I was in Sitka yesterday talking with fishermen about the Pacific salmon tree, and of course the range of interests there are having to do with the status of king salmon stocks and transboundary rivers and feeder kings and the full range of issues that affect king salmon, a concern that Alaska has lost 50% of its harvest share of Chinook in the several decades that various aspects of this Pacific Salmon Treaty have been modified as to how it is negotiated and managed. There's a lot of angst there, and we'll be spending time with particularly Southeast fishermen on those issues. We also have been dealing with the government of British Columbia on the transboundary river issues. We have five rivers. The Yukon River is actually covered under the Pacific Salmon Treaty, not the Boundary Waters Treaty. Again, probably most of you knew that. I didn't know it until they gave me this job. And so dealing with particularly mineral development in British Columbia has been an area that we've wanted to monitor very closely, and we've worked, again, closely with the British Columbia government and the Canadian federal government to see that we have a structure and a process and the opportunity to build relationships that allow us to do that job. I was in Ottawa 2 months ago with Senator Dan Sullivan, and we met with ministers and senior officials in the Trudeau government on that subject. Canada is in the process of revamping its environmental assessment process. There's a new government in British Columbia, and they are doing the same, so we're working closely with them. We're developing an accord with the Yukon territorial government to strengthen relationships there. As I mentioned, the Yukon River Treaty, the Pacific Salmon Treaty, deals with Chinook salmon on the Yukon River, and those runs have been depleted for some time. We've had an uptick in the past 2 years, a fairly decent uptick last year, and both fishers on the Yukon subsistence on the main stem of the Yukon and Canada, but some very modest, not taking of Chinook, but chum fishery and silver fishery on the lower Yukon were pretty good. What we're doing with Fish and Game is visiting the entire river system and having conversations with the folks who use and take, and for generations, if not millennia, have depended upon king salmon as a major source of food and lifestyle. We've been engaging with both our national government and the Canadian federal government, as I mentioned, on the transboundary rivers issue. We'll be traveling to D.C. in May for meetings with EPA and the State Department on transboundary fisheries management. It's interesting, and I'm going to shift right now to climate change. When we saw, as did the world, that our federal government was essentially moving away from climate change as a major federal policy initiative, Governor Walker decided that we need to stand up our own effort, which we've done. We have a statewide leadership team. We have engaged our cabinet in a focus on dealing with climate change, global warming issues, the impact on fisheries is likely to be murky for a while in terms of a lot of science being attached to what we see on the ground and is evolving on the ground. You know, the blob and the cod thing, you know about better again than I do, but that was and is a reality that our science needs to come to grips with and understand. We are also engaging, for example, with Hawaii, the government of Hawaii, the University of Hawaii, on creating relationships, because the North Pacific becomes the South Pacific, and there's no boundary there. And so building relationships wherever we can in order to understand what is happening in our oceans and to begin to, on our part at least, understand better the policies that various institutions, including our North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, the Pacific Council, there is a Hawaiian Islands Area Council, and other institutions are doing to respond to a changing global climate. The effort to understand the North Pacific, our previous involvements in climate change, at least with this administration, had been through the Arctic Council, which has been focused more on the Arctic. All of the work, everything that is impacting the Arctic essentially is associated with climate change, and so that's where the focus had been, and we're shifting now to create relationships and focus on the North Pacific, the Bering Sea, in addition to the Arctic, and so a focus on building relationships there is important. I think I mentioned here last year when I spoke about climate change, and my son still feels the same way. He's a commercial fisher out of Yakutat, a troller and longliner, and he still believes that the ocean world is changing almost faster than he can keep up with it. He used to be comfortable out in the ocean. He says he's really not so much anymore. And I think that's a reality for a lot of folks. The effort to increase science, to strengthen research, is hugely important in this entire area. And it's one that we in Alaska should be concerned with, because with our fiscal circumstance, and more than that, the ideology of the leadership of at least the Senate of the Alaska legislature is that big government is not good, small government is good, really small government is the best, regardless of what that means relative to Alaskans' aspirations and their needs and their desires. And so watching Fish and Game Department budgets are, for example, it's going to be hugely important to all of us, having the ability in the Natural Resources Department, the Department of Environmental Conservation, making sure that the university has appropriate funding. All of that is critical to both the near term and the long term requirements of both managing and understanding and creating both social and public policy responses to a pretty rapidly changing world. So it's important that we all be engaged with what's going on in Juneau. And I know you know that, and you live it. The governor recently appointed or nominated Duncan Fields to the Fisheries Board, Board of Fish. His nomination, I won't say is in trouble, but there is a concerted effort by sports fish groups across the state to stop that appointment. The governor has nominated John Jensen to the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, and that appointment should be dealt with by the Secretary of Commerce sometime during the summer. You know, and again, you folks know this better than we do. You've lived it likely, many of you, much, much longer. Folks, when the governor took office, said, you're going to be dealing with life and death, and if that's not bad enough, you're also going to be dealing with fisheries. And so that's something that he wrestles with and we wrestle with every single day, trying to keep the balances, trying to make a structure that, in our judgment, is in need of change. And I'm looking at Dave Benton when I say that, the conversation we need to have. The shrinking of an entire system into a very small scope of decision making is really hard to deal with. It really is. And so I think we collectively need to think about how to strengthen that structure. Our goal, the governor's and mine, has been to, in our decision making, be as transparent as possible, reach out to as many folks as is necessary and appropriate to effectuate the decision making process, to not do things in or behind closed doors, to work hard to have whatever we do benefit Alaska, to make Alaska's world premiere. And sometimes that's a bit shaky, and you kind of have to take a deep breath to say it with conviction. Alaska's world-class fisheries management, to continue to have that reputation throughout the world. And as we look at climate change, as we look at the changes that we're having to make to the various treaties and management institutions that affect us, hearing from, having the leadership of fishermen and women, having the leadership of your organizations, having the involvement of NGOs who are dealing in so many different ways with the same resource from some different and differing perspective, but I think most all with the same goals of conservation, preserving the value of resources for current and future generations. All of those things are hugely important, and we work hard to try to be as close as we can in terms of involvement and to have the kinds of conversations, the kind of relationships that hopefully, at the very least, keep us from making stupid decisions. So that's all I've got. I'd be glad to answer any questions anybody might have. Be run out of the room on a rail if you choose. Yes, sir.
Yeah, Jeff Griffin with the Southwest Alaska Municipal Conference. Do you have an update, Lieutenant Governor, on the pink salmon disaster funding that was funded by Congress in response to Governor Walker's request to the Secretary of Commerce to declare a disaster, which she did under the Obama administration in 2017? There was funding, $200 million nationwide for that, and what is the state doing, or how what progress is being made for distribution or for use of that money?
Okay, thank you. Barbara Blake has been involved with that issue, and she can speak to it.
So I think Trent will actually give you a little more in-depth a little bit later, but we haven't heard much. They're still negotiating between Department of Commerce and what that might look like in terms of distribution. So unfortunately, other than what's been reported out by news broadcasters and folks, we don't have any other additional updates. We're still waiting for Federal Department of Commerce to give us a response as to what Alaska's portion of that money is going to look like.
It's good to hear that I'm not the only person in the dark, I guess.
No, we all are. Yeah.
But we are engaged, and our delegation is also engaged, so it isn't like we're sitting twiddling our thumbs.
What is the latest on the transboundary line issue, the Tulsa-Gucci line? I know you're working with them, and it's a relatively slow process, but where are we?
Yeah, she asked, Margie asked the status of the transboundary discussions, particularly the status of the effort to stop mine waste discharge from the Tulsqua Chief Mine on the Taku, or on an offshoot of the Taku River, the Tulsqua River. That was a big topic for Senator Sullivan and myself in Ottawa. Both British Columbia and the Canadian federal government put on their best face and said to us, we're from the government and we're here to help you. So we'll see where that goes. But we have been pushing very hard for them and the owner property, the whole thing is very complex because the owners are in bankruptcy and the government has to step in to essentially stop the mine water discharge. It's very complicated and very costly. I'm not making excuses. That's just the reality. It's an area that has been mined for over 30 to 40 years and more with various kinds of processes used. It's exacerbated a little bit by the fact that both our Department of Environmental Conservation and Canadian Water Quality Monitoring that is required at the site and further downriver has shown no appreciable impact beyond the continuing natural discharges of whatever it is that those waters leach. But it's something we continue to push. Both the BC government and the national government right now are in the process of changing their environmental assessment processes with a particular focus on mineral development. Both are controversial. In British Columbia, it is becoming more controversial, of course, with some folks saying you're doing too much, others saying you aren't doing enough. So I think they're a bit distracted, but it's something that we continue to push. I'm not sure when our next operating committee meeting is going to take place, but we'll have another update then. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you for coming. I was kind of reflecting with your level of travel and engagement with our communities throughout Alaska, and currently at the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council, there's a discussion of developing a Bering Sea Fisheries Ecosystem Plan, and one of the components that's being considered, this will serve as a guidance document for the council to better incorporate the ecosystem and the climate-related changes. But within the discussion is interest in bringing greater understanding and input from Western Alaska communities with traditional knowledge and the local knowledge. And so kind of the people that live on the front lines in these areas can also help inform management decisions and the scientists and help provide this guidance. I know with your interest in climate-related issues and your engagement in communities, do you have a sense of how we might help kind of facilitate that dialogue and increase that engagement from our community members throughout the state?
Yeah, thank you for that. Again, one of our priorities as an administration, in addition to what I mentioned about transparency and openness and reaching out, government affirmatively reaching out to folks, is that every voice be heard. You know, we don't believe in the notion that because of whatever, that any Alaskan should be run over in decision-making, particularly when they are affected and their voice not heard. In the prior federal administration, the Obama administration, at the very end of that administration, there was a series of presidential orders or executive orders creating what was called the Bering Sea Resilience Area. It was an effort that was begun by local leadership. The Kuwerik tribal organization in Norton Sound, the Alaska Village Council ABCP in southwestern Alaska, a group called the Bering Sea Elders, and a number of other NGOs put together as a series of recommendations to the federal government about management of changing circumstances in the Bering Sea, everything from sea lanes to the disappearance of ice and where walrus were seeming now to be hauling out, and how to deal with those areas, how to deal with a whole range of management issues, and creating a region-wide organization that would counsel and advise federal and state agencies on the full range of climate change and resource management and sea lane and changing ocean circumstances management over time. That was all taken down by the new administration. And Senator Murkowski is working on an effort to try to work with local folks to reprise that in some way. And we're part of that effort and supportive of it. In our climate change efforts, we have focused on that very issue. How do we hear local voices, particularly in those areas? And most of them are rural areas where climate change is being felt most, and the impacts are very real. So those concerns you have at the council level are certainly ours. One of the things that I've been advocating I've had the opportunity in the last couple of years to meet with folks in Washington, D.C., from around the world. I mentioned meeting with some folks in Canada, meeting with Hawaiians. I met with the president of Fiji. I met with leadership from Palau, Pacific Island leadership, all of whom, almost to a person and almost with the same language, say, well, they're speaking in different languages, saying, our voice needs to be heard. And so an effort to create a Pacific-wide, including Canada, and we also met with a special counsel from Japan on that idea, but creating an Indigenous Peoples Climate Change Alliance so that that voice in particular can be focused and heard in this ever-increasing dialogue.
Are there any more questions for Byron or Lieutenant Governor?
Yes, sir.
I guess, so as everyone here is aware, there's several citizen initiatives that are potentially coming up in the next year dealing with salmon habitat. And there's the courts are looking at that as well. Former Governor Knowles recently wrote an opinion suggesting that the sides come together. And if there's opportunity for looking at salmon habitat, I was wondering if you had any comments about that?
Well, it is in litigation now. The governor has said that he has serious reservations with the scope of the initiative, not its intent, because it would, and we've had legal analysis of this, it would severely restrict any use, not just development, but any meaningful use of any water bodies that we now recognize as water bodies, but which have the ability to be developed by property owners, to be modified, to be used, to be used for a whole range of purposes, for example, municipalities, individuals, and now even those kinds of water bodies that we're talking about would be considered anadromous, and the whole character of the regulatory process would change. And we collectively think that that's, again, the intent we share, but the reach of that initiative is pretty overwhelming. That makes the ability of the legislature, and Representative Stutz and some others have been in conversation with the governor's office and with some other folks. I don't know the status of those conversations now, whether they're ongoing or not, but the reach of that initiative is so complete across every water body in Alaska that for the legislature to create a statute that would essentially be similar enough in nature that a statute could replace the initiative is considered by most to be almost impossible. So it looks like we're going to be in for another fight where resource developers are putting up a lot of money to fight it. Those on the other side are passionate about it, and we, with any group that comes to Juneau and talks to us and in gatherings like this, lay out our concerns and say that we would be available to discuss. When that initiative first came to my office, in our analysis and that of the Department of Law, we saw this problem with it. Didn't turn it down, but asked the proponents of the initiative to make changes such that we could advance it, and they did not, and that resulted in, at least in our judgment, they did not. That resulted in litigation in which a Superior Court judge upheld the proponents. It's now on appeal to the State Supreme Court, and that's where we are.